Good morning. So I'm Claire, now Gibbons, previously King, if that helps anyone. I live in Thailand, and our family works for a Christian aid and development organization called Partners Relief and Development. But I used to live here in Palmy. This is where we went to youth group and got married and went to kids' church. And so this is a home for us. And every couple of years, we come and we visit in person. But we feel very much part of this church family, and we're thankful for so many of you who support us in prayer, some of you who send us encouraging emails, the welcome smiling faces when we return, and you pray for us, you encourage us, you cheer us on. So thank you. Thank you for being who you are as a church family. And seeing that up close and personal for my family this year through your love and care of my mum and dad while we've been far away. So thank you also for your precious care of my family. We appreciate that so much. And I got to be honest that while I feel quite privileged to be standing in front of you this morning, I'm also a little bit scared when I speak in this kind of environment. More than a little bit stretched, to be honest. I am by no means a theologian. I'm not a pastor. Speaking to a crowd is definitely, definitely, definitely not my passion. I'm an extrovert, but I'm a mum. And I work part-time. I take my kids to school. I organise play dates, cook dinner. My everyday schedule, the things I do, aren't so different from a mum here in Thailand, and a mum here in New Zealand versus what I do in Thailand. So what I'd like to do today is share a bit about how God has shaped our perspective of the world over the last few years, and it's changed a bit. But if I'm honest, when I say life isn't so different, I should probably say that, as we do say in Thailand, and I was so pleased to see the theme this morning, the same, same, but different. That's something that's said all the time in Thailand. It's a phrase that is always used. So it's same, same, but it's also very different. So whether it's starting to learn about new things or gradually changing your view on something, sometimes God radically shifts your focus and your passions. And life is full of opportunities to see the world a bit differently. And that all affects your perspective, the way you look at the world. In our life, God has done this a number of times. And I'd like to share just two of them with you this morning, with just a basic goal. Give you a fresh perspective. To remind you all, to remind myself, that God is alive and at work in some of the hardest situations you could imagine. And in those situations, hope and light can be found in that immeasurable darkness. And I guess most importantly, that you guys can and are already part of that. You are part of that hope. Now this morning, I'm not going to give you a lot of Bible verses and run you through the theology, because that's not my skill. That's not what God's given me. But God can help me through this morning by a few stories. And that's what Jesus did, so that's what you're going to get. But what you are also going to get is a little bit of my heart, so I hope you feel stretched a little bit this morning too. One of my favourite verses is Psalm 27, verse 13. And this is a verse that one of our colleagues has shared with us so many times that I've lost count. And it says, and I'm going to say it twice just so it sinks in, "I would have been without hope if I had not believed that I would see the loving kindness of the Lord in the land of the living." Okay? Psalm 27:13, "I would have been without hope if I had not believed that I would see the loving kindness of the Lord in the land of the living." Okay. A little over 10 years ago, I went on a holiday. I went on a vacation with some friends, and we went to the beach, and we had a great time. We rode some motorcycles. And we also went and visited this organisation called Partners Relief and Development. And for about a week of that trip, we spent in a refugee camp, teaching English. It was fairly standard for a mission trip. And what we found ourselves was in the aftermath of a large-scale humanitarian crisis. So a large cyclone that just devastated the countries nearby is called Cyclone Nargis. And I don't know if many of you heard about this cyclone, but 130,000 people died in 2008 in a cyclone just by Thailand and Myanmar. The unimaginable number of people who died, 130,000, wrap your head around that number. That number was greatly exacerbated because the government, the military that controlled Myanmar, intentionally blocked aid. We were in the refugee camps 3 weeks later as people had walked from the Irrawaddy Delta, from where the centre of the storm was, to where we were 3 weeks' walk away, with horrible, horrible stories. Stories like we could see the boats full of aid supplies in the harbour, but the military and the government, they wouldn't let it in. So, on this trip, we met some humble, faithful people, people that were truly living out being Jesus to those people. And despite it being difficult, they chose discomfort. They chose distance from families and from the ones they love. They chose an all-encompassing passion to show God's love to the victims of a complex war, and at that time, a horrific national disaster. It was that exposure up close to a phenomenal example from the partners team about how hope and how the possibility of God's light shining love into that context really radically redefined our worldview. And it precipitated us selling everything, shifting to Thailand with two suitcases, thinking that we would be there for 3 years. Almost 10 years later, fairly certain that's where God has us. And it's God's new perspective of the infinite value of these people and our potential to make a tangible difference that changed the full trajectory of our lives. Now, I don't know if any of you know a lot about Myanmar, but I'm not going to go into the history because it's complex and it's dark and there's kids here. And I don't think they need to hear all the bad things that people can do to each other. It's nothing new. This country's known decades of unrest, and it's controlled. And it's actually continued as they've transitioned to a nominally democratic government over the last few years. It's still controlled by the military behind the scenes, and there's lots of bad stuff happening. This world is our normal. That's our same. This is the world that Doug and I have been called into by God, and it's where we continue to get stretched, where we continue to hope to live and love and to grow and to love people beyond ourselves for God's sake. Now, August 25th last year, almost a year ago now, was a time when we got another fresh perspective in our lives. And we were sitting in our lounge with the leadership team, which Doug and I are both a part of, and we're talking about finances and we're talking about budgets and reports and schedules, and the news started to roll in on social media and phone calls that a wave of violence and abuse had been started to be perpetrated against the Muslim people, predominantly Muslim people known as Rohingya. It was the start of a massive displacement of men, women and children from the west of Myanmar across the border into Bangladesh. And a horrifying 7,000 people were murdered by their own government over the next month. Now, you need to know that we've been working with this people group for more than 6 years now. And so, it's our friends. And a strong sense that God had placed us in this moment. And God had been putting us here and preparing us for how he wanted us to love into this unimaginable context. And an almost entirely Muslim people group of roughly 1 million, considered the world's largest stateless people group and desperately unwanted and despised by others in Myanmar, and as well as being despised and unwanted from Bangladesh, where they were heading to. That all happened starting August 25. August 29, just 3 days later, Doug and one of our colleagues were in Bangladesh, standing on the bank of the Naaf River that forms the border between Bangladesh and Myanmar. from that vantage point, Doug took a photo and sent it to me at home with the kids. And it was a photo of a river, but beyond the river there was smoke. Just a few kilometres away. Knowing now, across that border, we know what was happening, but we didn't know at the time. And a few thousand people had already crossed the border, and that first trickle, that first few thousand people, in the weeks that followed, became 700,000. Many of them sharing directly with us unspeakable stories. Certainly we'd heard their stories before. They're our friends, and we'd seen this reaching a boiling point. It was, in some ways, what we'd expected. But what does this new perspective feel like? Hearing the very worst that people can inflict upon each other. It's absolutely horrible. But our team have been constantly on the ground since then, delivering aid, love, hope, for the last almost a year now, directly into the camps where those 700,000 people have been displaced, as well as into the camps that are almost like concentration camps still in Myanmar, where 120,000 people remain unable to leave. And so Doug and I have both been directly involved in those efforts. I want to show you a short video of me in Bangladesh in November of last year.
Hi, I'm here with Partners Ready for Development in the Rohingya camps in Bangladesh. We've been here in the camps the last 3 days, and I'm a mum and my heart's broken. I've just seen lines and lines of mums with little tiny babies, and the babies far too small for what I know a healthy baby looks like. And it's scary enough being a new mum, let alone being a new mum in a refugee camp, in a camp where there's not enough food, where medical supplies are limited, where you don't even have any support for breastfeeding or for even to know what's happening to your body. And it's wonderful to see the community health workers here even doing things that are a little bit out of their cultural comfort zone, sharing these hygiene packs for these women, because you know that this is actually going to give them some freedom. We were looking for someone to give the hats to, and the hats are all sizes, but we had one that was really, really small, and we gave it away, but then we saw the smallest baby we'd seen all day, and she's teeny, 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 tiny baby, just 5 days old, was just already sick and already looking quite desperate, and I couldn't imagine having my baby here. And the mother can't even get out of bed. She hasn't got any milk. We gave them a Days for Girls hygiene pack, so that at least the bleeding after that she'll have some way of being taken care of a little bit. But it's pretty desperate. I honestly don't know what's going to happen to this little baby. I don't know that there's much we can do but pray, and I will, and I am, and I'm feeling a bit heartbroken. If it was me, I'd want every bit of help I could possibly get. If it was me, I'd want people to go to the ends of the earth for my babies. And it's good to see that people are, and we are amazed by the people that are mobilised around the world to share their love and to be here. It's been wonderful to have all of you with us, even though you're not here. We know that you go with us and you support us, so thank you.
Okay, so that's me getting my heart irreversibly broken for the upteenth time in what is currently one of the largest refugee camps in the whole world. I'd also like to share you a story of a young mother I met in that same context. It was stifling hot sitting in her makeshift shelter. It was made out of bamboo and tarpaulins. And we knew her family had been living on fairly minimal rations, but the feast that they gave us and the generosity they showed us was really humbling. And this woman, her name was Yasmin, and she was 9 months pregnant the day the army threatened to destroy her village. She'd already started to go into labour that day, and then they heard the villagers heard the soldiers come to their village, so they ran. They walked in the heat of the day, constantly looking back to see if the soldiers were getting any closer. From afar, they could see the smoke of their houses burning, and they knew there was no turning back. So she did what she had to do. She delivered her baby in the jungle that night, and her friends from her village, villages and family, they risked their lives to stay with her until the baby was born, but then she insisted that they went on. She said to me, you know, they needed to leave and get to Bangladesh, and she said, I knew I could stay and hide with the baby and hope that no one would find me. Nobody wanted to leave her, but they knew she was right, and they left. So she spent the night alone with her baby in the jungle, not daring to sleep as she listened. She said that she was really afraid, and the next day she got up and she walked, and she said that she walked almost 12 days. I don't know about any of you mums out there, but can you imagine walking 12 days with a newborn? She now lives with 9 others of her family in a small shack in a crowded refugee camp, and that's where I met her. She told us the story, and she was holding her baby, and she said, she's like, I haven't given him a name yet. And she's like, this was 3 months after the baby was born. And do you know what she said? She said, I think I'll call him Problem. Now, I don't know if what the future looks like for that little baby. I hope they'll get to meet Yasmin again. That's possible. We're connected to her and her family, so that's something that I hope will happen in the future. But she lives in an overcrowded camp in a country that doesn't want her, where there's not enough food, not enough water, not enough shelter, certainly no privacy, minimal health care, and she doesn't know if her kids will ever get to go to school. Do you know what she asked for? Nothing. She said, please tell my story. And that's what every Rohingya family we've met has said. Tell the world what's happened to us. Tell them what we're here. And that's what I want to do this morning. What I do know is that God has created each one of them in his image. They've been subjected to something deliberate and systemic that's, I want to just call evil. There's a hatred built upon fear and propaganda that goes to the very heart of the military and the government in this country. When I hear stories like Yasmin's firsthand, or I filter through reports of stories from other people in projects and conflict zones, it's easy to get heart heavy. I've been exposed to some of the most horrific and horrible things that people can do to each other. But while I've seen the worst that human hands can do, I've also seen the very, very best. I've seen a Karen pastor choose to go and live amongst the Rohingya despite the risk of significant personal danger. He shares his faith and his home with dozens of people who've come to know Jesus as their Lord and Saviour. He connected his new family with believers in Bangladesh and when they had to flee the violence last year. And now, in a group of 1 million Muslim Rohingya, there is this little pocket of believers. A little pocket of believers who are showing practical care and support and showing these people what Jesus' love looks like. I've also met and prayed for an imam, a Muslim leader in Bangladesh. He leads a mosque of more than 2,000 people in an area where Muslim against Muslim violence occurs for those that aren't Muslim enough. So, for him to be working with a Christian aid and development organization is significantly risky for him. He's been faithfully working with us, delivering aid to tens of thousands of people, and doing it with this great risk because he gets it. He knows that to love is to act. The last time we met in person, I prayed for him. And as we left him with funds and plans to provide food for even more malnourished infants and provide even more tarpaulins, he had a simple request for me too. He said, please keep on praying for me and my family. I've also met New Zealanders, Australians, Americans, Norwegians, Canadians, people from all over the world that have sent knitted hats for babies, that have provided materials for feminine hygiene packs, that have faithfully prayed and encouraged us, and that have sent automatic payments every month for almost 10 years for Doug and I to keep us in Thailand. This is some of the very best too. A few weeks ago, some of our team were in Syria, which is a new place for us. And on the very day that they were about to leave, 7,000 people got displaced from an area where there had been 3 years of violence. So our team is working together there too with a group of Syrian Christians who are leading amazing efforts not only to provide food and medical care in that environment, but to start businesses that provide employment, sleeping bags, give dignity to people that have had so much taken away, and shine Jesus' love. No matter how dark, how horrid, how numbing and unpleasant to think about, there is hope. We serve a loving and caring God who loves all of his creation, every single person. And we have an opportunity to be his hands and feet. Sometimes, for me and Doug and our family, that means taking risks and going to places that it's not easy to go to. But it's equally about intentionality for all of us, about how we treat each other, especially those that need a little extra support. It's about praying for this country, about praying for our world and for one another. Because at the end of the day, it's all about people. It's about hope, and it's about not shutting our eyes to the heartache of our world and understanding how God's heart is broken for all of us. In our shared humanity and our shared brokenness, we have a phenomenal opportunity to be God's light and hope to one another. Now, I believe to truly love is to put that love into action. For us, that means going to the heart of the hurt to sit alongside mothers, fathers, children, widows, orphans, you name it, in their times of great crisis. We hope to see them as Jesus does and love them as if they were ourselves and our own children and our family. We're far from perfect. Please hear me. Please hear me. We're not perfect at all. But that's our hope. And we can't go there without your love, without your prayers, without God leading us and guiding us. Whenever we hear about new stuff happening, we don't have to wonder how God would have us respond, because he made a verse for this one. And it's Matthew 25:35, and it's another favourite. Jesus says, "For I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink." Sometimes it really is just that simple. And sometimes you spend the entire day calling or emailing everyone you know to see if they'll help. Because sometimes feeding a few thousand people isn't in the budget. Sometimes it's stuff that we can't answer and we can't help with, but we believe strongly that God's put us there. Because God's put us face to face with these hungry kids and thirsty mums, we stop and we help as much as we can, because to love is to act. So today, I hope you understand a little bit more about us and our work, about God's love and the hope that it can bring to conflict zones, that you have a little bit of a fresh perspective on something that's happening in your world. Because once you know, you can't unknow. Now it's all of our responsibility, and together we have to be bringers of hope. The hard stuff in our world isn't going away, and in many situations it's getting worse, but there's always room for hope, and there's always room for something we can do.